A listener production.
I'm Katie Williams, and this is Better For It, helping you and I become the best versions of ourselves one week at a time. I want to inspire each of us to think differently about our health and our lifestyle habits and make positive changes to our lives. I'm going to ask the questions that we all want to know the answers to so we can work on our health together. Hey guys, in this episode, we're talking about eating disorders and disordered eating. If you are struggling with this, you can call the Butterfly Foundation on 1800 33 46 73. Today, I'm joined by Alice Bleithman, who is a dietitian and nutritionist. She helps people change their relationship with food, including eating disorders, disordered eating, and how to feel confident with food. Alice, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me, Katie. I'm really excited to have a chat.
Me too. This episode is how to spot disordered eating and also to seek help. And the reason why I wanted to get you in was because I've actually had issues with disordered eating. I've never had an eating disorder, but I really have had disordered eating. So when I was an athlete, I would extreme clean eat, no sugar. All the alcohol I drank was only like clean spirits, nothing that made me put on weight. Super high protein, low carb. I played around with lots of different forms of fuel, which sounds kind of toxic in itself. And I also had a lot of anxiety around putting on weight because I had to stay the same weight when I was an athlete. I really had to be as light as I possibly could, but as strong as I could, which meant I had to have really low body fat, but quite a good amount of muscle mass, which obviously meant that I had to look at my macros in food and make sure I was reaching lots of nutritional targets. The other thing I also have struggled with lately and also in the past is body dysmorphia. And as I've gotten older, I've put on weight and I feel okay about it now. But over the last few years, like I've really felt down about it. I actually did a lot of TVCs and a lot of commercials and a lot of modeling where I actually had to have a six pack. You were hired because of that. So I don't actually think my career has served me in any way to have a healthy relationship with my body or with food. So I feel really passionate about this because I've had my own struggles. Another random one was I'm actually anaphylactic. So when I was 19 or 18, I figured out I was anaphylactic to shellfish. So I created this food anxiety and fear of some foods, and I actually started to lose quite a bit of weight. I didn't want to, but that was a form of disordered eating because I was anaphylactic and, you know, the foods could kill me. But also in my head, I thought so many things could kill me. And now, God, like, you know, you can serve me up anything and I just go, if it's my time, it's my time. I have come so far, so far. I will eat all around the world. I mean, look, there's obviously lots of foods I can't eat being anaphylactic.
Yeah.
But, you know, I look back at my poor 18-year-old self and think you were so anxious and so afraid. And I just want to give her a little hug.
Yeah.
So that's why I wanted to get you in today. That was a long rant.
That was nice. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
You know what? Like, that's not the first time I've heard that at all, especially when it comes to allergies. And that's like a whole nother ball game. Disordered eating when allergies is, or like with the diseases such as celiac disease or diabetes, where they have to not have certain foods, insane. And it's not talked about enough. But then again, there's the other side of things where it's disordered eating just because of, you know, body image or social media. And that's huge, absolutely insane. And sports as well, which compound that and needing to be a certain size because of your career. I mean, I'm not surprised that you've had to deal with all that sort
of
stuff.
But it almost feels like half of the world have some form of disordered eating, but it's actually not an eating disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is there more to this?
Yeah. I would say that honestly, like, it's, well, as a dietitian who works with mostly women, I would say that most of the women I see or I hear from or I'm surrounded with have some form of disordered eating, which is so sad. And I think that the fact that diet culture and social media plays into that, it kind of becomes the norm. Like disordered eating is sort of the norm. And if you don't have a disordered relationship with food or challenged relationship with food, you're kind of like
weird.
Yeah. It's like, oh, you can eat that and not feel guilty. Like, and it's just, that's so backwards, but it is
backwards.
Yeah, it is true. And I think that social media and diet culture and all that sort of stuff has definitely fed into that. But the difference, I guess, between an eating disorder and disordered eating is an eating disorder is a clinical diagnosis. Like it's a mental illness from like the DSMR. So to be diagnosed with an eating disorder, you need to have certain criteria or meet certain criteria. And that is more sort of a mental illness side of things. Where a disordered eating, when you have an eating disorder, you have disordered eating, but you're not necessarily, you don't necessarily have an eating disorder if you're got disordered eating, if that makes sense. So disordered eating is more of an umbrella term for just different or challenging or how would you say, like
restrictive in some
way. Restrictive or there's a lot of rules around things, for example, fasting or missing macronutrients in your diet or, you know, even things like guilt or emotions surrounding food. So that is a disordered eating. That is disordered eating, but then that can definitely turn into an eating disorder if it's not managed well or if certain things like, you know, environmental factors kind of trigger those behaviors to get worse.
When I was training as a full-time athlete, I would see food as fuel and kind of like fuel only, which is pretty hectic. I wouldn't really care about the taste. It was literally all about like, what was in it, how it was serving me, how it was fueling me, and how I was recovering. When I think about it, it probably sounds a little bit like I had, it sounds a lot like I had disordered eating. Is this another version of disordered eating?
It's so hard, that question, because athletes need to be strict. Athletes need to be strict. They need to have certain macronutrients. They need to have certain diets. They need to be in a certain weight. And so it's really important to be strict in that way. But then as well, to be honest, like that is definitely an area of disordered eating too. And I guess like the thing to ask yourself is like, you know, if you are in off season, for example, can you deviate from that? Is it just more so I'm using it as fuel and it's important for my training and recovery, but when I'm on off season, I can deviate from it a little bit and I feel okay, you know?
I didn't have an off season.
Yeah, so
I didn't have that's probably not an off season for 10 years.
Wow.
We trained like 360 days of 365 days.
Okay.
We had small breaks, but not much. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is the thing. Like you probably needed to do that to be the level that you were at, but it's definitely disordered eating.
Yeah.
But it sometimes needs to be to get to that point. So
it's hard because it's tied into your career and it's tied into your results.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so hard. Mm. I think that, I mean, that would be some form of what we call like orthorexia, which is like a basically a desire to be the healthiest you can be from a diet point of view. So clean, like not having any sort of processed foods, like looking at food just purely as fuel and as a way to nourish yourself, but not from a sort of like a enjoyment point of view necessarily. So it is. And like orthorexia is now, I believe, an eating disorder. But yeah, honestly, so many athletes do have orthorexia.
I know.
But it's sort of normal because that's what they need to have to achieve what they're achieving.
What are some characteristics of disordered eating that we might see in ourselves or we might notice in someone in our lives?
That's a really good question. I think it's a really important one too because I reckon a lot of people that you see, it's sort of normalized that that's how they should be eating, but it's actually not normal. So things like intermittent fasting is sort of normalized, but in a lot of aspects, it's actually not healthy for a lot of people and it's done in a really unhealthy manner. So, and I guess that's the whole concept behind a lot of these symptoms is what is the intention of them? That's really important. You know, is the intention of them to lose weight? Is it to control yourself? Is it control your food? Then that's actually not a very healthy intention. So things like missing meals, things like only having a certain number of macronutrients a day or skipping certain food groups or feeling guilty when you're having certain foods, in particular those like highly refined foods like chocolate and ice cream, exercising in response to eating certain foods or going out for certain meals, feeling a lot of guilt and shame, and then also using food to manage or sort of suppress certain emotions. So for example, if you're feeling really angry or sad or upset, using food as a way to manage that or self-soothe or feel like you're self-soothing those emotions. So they're really, really common sort of symptoms.
But God, it sounds like everyone.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It sounds like everyone.
How do we stop emotionally eating?
I know.
I've honestly had to get I see a healer who's like a therapist as well. And for a lot of my time with her, I would talk about me wanting sugar and what I'm actually craving. And I have, I don't eat a lot of sugar. I'm talking a little bit a day. But I know I often turn or have that craving, and it's usually when I'm feeling lonely.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting. Or if I'm feeling overwhelmed, I'll be at my desk at home and something will overwhelm me and I'll think to myself, oh, I'm going to make a snack. Just go make a snack to distract myself. And it's really interesting now I'm really trying to distance myself between, the instant, because it's not a craving. It's an instant. It's procrastination, or it's an instant
urge.
Fix or state change.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's I'm not hungry. Mm-hmm. I've just eaten. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it is a mask. It is a Band-Aid. And I think because these characteristics of disordered eating are so normalized, it's even hard to know where it has come from.
Mm-hmm.
In your opinion, where do you think disordered eating has come from?
Yeah. In my opinion, I think that it's not one, there's no one cause for disordered eating. No way. Because we've seen it many, 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 many years ago before even social media existed.
Okay.
So it's not come from social media. I think that as humans, we compare a lot. And so that could potentially be the reason why, comparison about what we're eating. And then also when you do look into history as well, there's been diets for so many years. And so nowadays, because we do have social media, it's just heightened it so much more. And then, you're exposed to all these different diets and research, and that's just compounded the issue. I don't think it's come from social media, but it's definitely made it worse. And then you pair that with so many things going on in the world right now, and control is really at the center of a lot of disordered eating. There's not much control a lot of people feel at the moment. So
absolutely not with COVID. Hopefully it's coming to an end.
It
would have been a time where a lot of eating disorders were sparked 100%. Or disordered eating started happening again.
Yeah.
What kind of impact would disordered eating or having an eating disorder do for your mental health, physical health, social health, all aspects of health? How does it affect you?
Oh, everything. Honestly, physical health, obviously. If you're not having certain macronutrients or enough food or you're intermittent fasting, huge impact on your health. You don't have to have an eating disorder to have physical implications of disordered eating. I'll give you an example. Someone might not have many carbohydrates. Carbohydrates are really important for energy. Carbohydrates are really important for certain vitamins and minerals. If you don't have, for example, any meat, and not from an ethical point, not from the fact that you just don't like it, just from a fact that you think it's bad for you. And then as a result, you don't have enough iron and B12, so you become deficient. These sorts of things, which it's not the worst thing that could happen, but, it does absolutely impact your physical health. And then from a mental health point of view, as an example, if you're worried about refined sugar, you're never going to go out for dinner. You're never going to go out for dessert with your friends. So that's going to impact your mental health if you feel like you really enjoy that sort of stuff. Also, you're thinking about it 24/7 because that's just the way the brain works. If you restrict something, you're going to think about it more.
Yeah. Don't think of the blue car.
Blue car. What was the other thing? Social health. So another example, if you go out for dinner and things, you're never going to go out for dinner. Even with you have a partner, if your partner likes cooking dinner, you're not going to have dinner if they cook a certain thing that's not aligned with
your impact your relationship, couldn't it?
Huge.
If you don't want to eat the food that your partner has done for you, made for you and done something beautiful for you.
100%. Even things like financial health. We know how expensive health foods are. And a lot of the time, diet culture tells us to have these certain foods that are 20 times the price of normal food. And that can impact your financial health. So it honestly impacts everything. And with my clients, they say it's not just them. It impacts their entire community, their parents, their friends, their partners, because their workplace, because it's just central to food is central to our lives, and it impacts so many things. So,
it keeps us alive.
Yeah.
It keeps us thriving.
Yeah, absolutely. Gosh. And it is insane. But then again, once you start building on your relationship with food, then that can have a fantastic impact as well. So
yeah, I want to talk to you about the other side of disordered eating or eating disorders. What can we get out of life if we're not constantly thinking about food?
I mean, like, I guess the other question, like, what can't you get out of life? If you, like, everything. You can, like, you don't, if you're not thinking about food, like, imagine all the other things you can think about. Work, social life, like, planning the future. A lot of the time, like, when we're thinking about food, we're not just thinking about food. We're thinking about our body. We're thinking about exercise. We're thinking about past, present. Like, we're never thinking about a past, present, future. We're never thinking about the actual present moment. We can do so much with our lives when our lives aren't revolved around food. Like the stuff that my clients tell me all the time about, like their enjoyment and happiness after they've recovered from their disordered eating or eating disorder is just like nothing else. And
so sweet.
It is so sweet. And if you're constantly thinking about food, it's not healthy and it's not normal.
No.
But you don't have to be thinking about food all the time.
Gosh. I feel sorry for my old self.
Yeah.
When I found out I was anaphylactic, I would stress so much about going out for dinner because I really can't eat a lot. I do eat Asian food, but like it's a gamble. Yeah. Like there's a lot. Like I'm also allergic to fish sauce. Oh, so because it's made with shellfish and whatnot. And I feel sorry for the people that I've dated in the past because like they can't eat it either because they can't kiss me. Like I'm that allergic. So my brain ticks constantly. Like I see, like we'll be out for dinner with Georgia. I'll see her, like if she orders something that I can't eat, which she very rarely does, but she's done it like twice. I see everything she's touched. Even if I'm drunk, I can see everything she's touched and what she sipped. And she'll be like, I'll go to, I don't know, someone will pass me hers. And I'm like, that's her water bottle that I can't, or that's her water I can't touch. Like I see everything. I pick up everything. But I do feel sorry for my old self because if I had a dinner coming up or something coming up where it was a restaurant I hadn't eaten at or a restaurant that I was a bit iffy on, all day I would be thinking about, I've got to go talk to the chef. I've got to make sure I've got my EpiPen. I've got to take all, like the pills in my bag. Like I have to take antihistamines. Like if I start to have a reaction. So I have like an emergency pack in my bag, never leave the house without it. But the exhausting thing about having food anxiety slash, you know, a serious life-threatening allergy is it takes up so much of your mental space. And also, you go to someone's house for dinner, they'd be like, oh, we're going to cook on the barbecue. And I'll think, have they cooked prawns on the barbecue? Because like, I panic. Because obviously, like, some people don't clean things up properly. So I'll sit there like, oh, my God. I used to actually, God, this is actually so bad. I used to drink a lot when I'd go out for dinner because if I was a bit drunk, I wasn't nervous. So my poor body, because, like, I'd be out, and I actually back then wasn't, like I wasn't really a big drinker, but I would drink a lot because I'd be so anxious that I would be like, all right, well, if I'm a bit pissed, like, and I have, and I won't be as stressed if I, it's so bad. I think it really, really fucked me up. Like I feel like I've made a recovery now because I've traveled the world and I've eaten foods in all different countries, but I've had allergic reactions in Thailand, two of them, rushed to hospital, back of a tuk-tuk. I've had an allergic reaction on the plane on the way to France. That of course I'm afraid of food.
Of course.
You know,
yeah,
but I've had 10 years of being anaphylactic and I'm so good now. Mm. Like I honestly think when I'm about to sit down and eat, I'm like, if this is the way I go, this is the way I go. At least I've got a Chardonnay and I'm having a beautiful salmon, you know?
And this is, I guess, a good example of it's really important if you do have an allergy or you do have an intolerance to see professional help because someone can help you with that. You know, it's probably taken too long for you. 10 years is a long
just
time.
Just took me 10 years of like trialing and erroring and having panic attacks when I ate. But
because
it's fine.
Like dietitians or like, you know, nutritionists or any sort of allergy professional can definitely help with that because allergy anxiety is huge. Like absolutely. Like there's so many of my clients who have anaphylaxis or celiac disease or IBS who have certain intolerances and have so much anxiety around food. Not necessarily from a disordered angle, but more so like they're scared that they're going to get a reaction or get a symptom. So actually like coming up with a plan, a strategy, like a foolproof plan when those events happen, like so important for your mental health as well.
If we're seeing, so obviously I've spoken to you about my numerous characteristics of disordered eating. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, I feel like, you know, I'm probably allowed to.
Yeah.
Having anaphylaxis and whatnot.
Yes.
And coming out the other side of it. But if we're seeing these characteristics in ourselves and we want to get help, what would be the first step?
I think the first step, definitely share with somebody you trust. Like, who cares if it's professional or not? If it's somebody that you trust and you feel comfortable sharing, do that. That's the first thing, because, you know, a problem shared is a problem halved. And a lot of the time with these sort of conditions or relationship with food, challenging relationship with food or mental illnesses, like, if we keep it bottled up, it's just going to get worse and worse and worse and worse. And sometimes sharing is really, really powerful. So that would be my biggest advice.
Yeah.
It can be, you know, it can be a psychologist, it can be a doctor, but it can also be like a really good friend or a family member or a partner.
So you can talk about it with someone you trust, which is obviously massive. But is there things that we can do for ourselves, or do we go get help? Like, is it, can we do hand in hand?
It depends. It depends, because it depends on what your abilities are and capabilities are and your self-awareness is. But to be honest, I would say try and get professional help if you can.
Yeah.
Professional help is always gold standard. And we know with disordered eating that the sooner you get help, the better. And with eating disorders as well, like, the sooner you get help, the better, the more chances of successful recovery. So professional help is really important. But something like, you know, if you can't get professional help, whether that be through a doctor or a psychologist or a dietitian, surrounding yourself with people who have good relationship with food, getting all those people that trigger you off social media, like, surrounding yourself with beautiful, amazing people is really, really important. Because if you're surrounding yourself with people who have disordered eating with disordered relationships with food, then it's going to be really hard for you to recover. So
totally.
Yeah. And then also, you know, questioning your behaviors, your eating behaviors, and asking yourself, like, you know, where they come from? Why am I doing this? Has it changed? Like, all these sorts of things just bring curiosity to the picture. But sometimes that's not possible. And sometimes we don't even really realize we have a disordered relationship with food until we actually seek professional help. And then they're like, all right, like, let's do this together. So yeah, I'd say professional help, absolutely.
But as much as you can.
Yeah.
I love that you say be curious, because I think, like, there's so many ways of learning. Mm. Obviously seeking professional help is the number one, but getting really curious, like, watch YouTube videos with psychologists.
Yeah.
Look up podcasts, read books, question what you think you know about your relationship with food. Because I know for me, my relationship with food and my body image, body dysmorphia has improved dramatically. But I'm also not with a bloody modeling agency.
Yeah.
And I also have grown up and stuff. And also the industry has changed.
Yeah.
So there's been obviously numerous, numerous factors. And of course, it's been over a period of 10, 15 years. But yeah, with Instagram and social media, follow people that inspire you. Yeah. There's so many body positive accounts and also great nutritionists, like, yeah, who are posting beautiful recipes, super healthy and balanced meals. Follow people who have credentials. Like, if you're going to follow a diet or like an eating plan, make sure it's from a nutritionist or a dietitian. The amount of people that ask me, what do you eat? I'm like, hey, like, I'm pescatarian. Yeah. I have a very balanced diet. I get iron infusions and B12 because I don't eat red meat. I don't care about telling people that I don't eat red meat, but I don't endorse it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like it. It doesn't sit well with me. It makes me sick. Just like prawns make me dead. You know what I mean? And I'm also lactose intolerant. So, like, I sit here and go, I can't tolerate milk or dairy, but that doesn't mean I'm saying it's bad for you. So I would never tell people what they should eat or that kind of stuff. And even if I did, like, a what I eat in the day or anything like that, I would disclaim it.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm not a dietitian. I've seen them. I'm not one. But every diet or nutrition or how plan or however you eat is different for every single person.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest message.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. 100%. And I think even, like, as a dietitian, I would never just tell someone what to eat, like, on Instagram or anything like that, because I don't know who they are. Like, who knows? They might have a disordered relationship with food. If I tell them to have this or this or this, like, that's not fair on anybody. And when you're seeing these what I eat in a day is, like, it's, you know, it is, it can be really toxic. Like, absolutely. Even if we are disclaiming things, like, people, unfortunately, do have that mindset of, like, or, you know, X eats like that, so therefore I need to eat like that to look like that. You know, it's so hard. It's so hard. But I think following people who do have a balanced relationship with food and who make you feel good and don't make you feel like you need to restrict or change your diet, like, that's really, really important. Because if you're still following these people, like, you're still going to feel like you're not enough. You're still going to compare your food. You're still going to have some sort of challenges with with food and like, no.
Life's too short, man. If they make you feel like shit, cut them.
Bye.
Just going back to seeking professional help, what would be the first step for people? Do they have to see a GP or could they like slide into your DMs? Like how does this work?
Yes. So if you have an eating disorder, it's different to disordered eating. Because in general, like if you've got an eating disorder, it's really important to have that holistic approach from a GP, a psychologist, and a dietitian because it's a mental illness and you need to have some sort of like medical management, you know, from a weight, biochemistry, et cetera. So definitely go to a GP if you think you have an eating disorder or you think somebody else has an eating disorder. Otherwise, if you don't have a GP, contact the Butterfly Foundation. They're amazing. They've got heaps of information on that. If you want to improve your relationship with food, if you feel like your relationship with food is not great or challenged, then you can just literally reach out to a dietitian and you'd be like, hey, do you have any appointments? There's heaps of dietitians online that you can even, I'm sure you follow someone on Instagram. If you're looking out, just message them.
Well, you are specifically in this space. So if our community listening at home knows someone or thinks they might have some characteristics of disordered eating or just genuinely want to see a nutritionist and a dietitian, we say hit you up.
If you want.
You're being humble, but she's the
best.
There
are some out there, I think. And then, you can go on sort of some care plans as well through like certain Medicare and things like that if that's something. So it's really, there is a lot of support, but it's the number one thing I would say is find someone you trust and you feel comfortable with. That is really, really, really important in my eyes from an angle, you know, coming from a dietitian, but even from a health professional, like, you know, past experience, if you don't feel comfortable with the health practitioner, change.
We're now going to jump to our listener questions.
Stunning.
Which our beautiful community has sent in. Question one is, why are you so passionate about this topic? Have you struggled with it too?
Love this question. I have definitely struggled with this 100%. Like when I was younger, I think that food, I've always loved eating. I've never not loved eating.
Hungry gal.
But I think that when you're a young adolescent and then something disrupts your childhood, then sometimes we use food as a way to control that because there's nothing else we can control. So I definitely use food as a way to control stuff that was going on in my life. And now I saw multiple dietitians, multiple psychologists, and I felt like the way that was approached wasn't fantastic. And so as a result, I kind of became a dietitian because I wanted to do something a little bit differently and I wanted to like support my clients who are going through that in a way that actually helps rather than just like band-aid approaching it. So I definitely have, and I'm so passionate about it now because of the fact that like I know what I needed, which I never got, but I can give it to my clients now, which is great.
That's so cool.
It's so cool, yeah.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. Question number two is, what are some things that trigger your clients?
Social media. But also can be used in a really positive way. Don't get me wrong, but a lot of things on social media, whether that be what I eat in a day, whether that be sort of diet myths or diet culture sort of stuff, like body image things, like a lot of those things do trigger my clients. Funnily enough, comments from family members, like partners, friends do trigger a lot of people, in particular comments around what they're eating or what they look like. That's a huge trigger because it's actually someone that means something to them. And that's something that we can talk about for hours. But like, don't comment on what someone's eating. Don't comment on what they look like.
No.
It's okay. Leave it because you don't know how much of an impact that makes on somebody. Huge. So yeah, those are the big triggers, I think.
Gosh, people used to say to me, as quite a few people would say to me, God, you eat a lot. Or are you still eating? And I'm like, if you knew like how far I've come, you wouldn't have said that.
Absolutely. Just don't do it. Just don't.
Yeah. People don't realize. They don't realize that it's probably the wrong thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even sometimes like some people might be like, oh, like if you say, oh, you eat so much. Like some people are like, that's a compliment. Well, you don't know. Like some people.
You don't know.
Yeah. Like that person may not have eaten all day and that's the only thing they're going to eat. And therefore like because they've only eaten that much.
That's their calories.
Yeah. Like it's just don't.
Just don't.
Just don't. That's the
answer. Comment on what they look like or what they're eating.
Yeah.
Just don't.
Just don't.
It's a no from us. Question number three is, if one of my friends has an eating disorder or someone close to me, how do I intervene? What can I do?
Yeah. It depends on your relationship. The best thing you can do is just talk to them. I know it's uncomfortable, but that's the best thing. Just be like, hey, I've noticed this. I'm here if you need, blah, 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 blah. There's heaps of things on the Butterfly Foundation or Inside Out, which is another website that you can use that kind of guides you as to what to say. Really depends on the situation. Do not approach them in a, you know, in a really stressful environment. Don't approach them when they're at school or when they're at uni or when they're at work. Really just make sure that's a safe environment for both of you. And if you don't feel comfortable doing that, like messaging them is also another option. Like doing something like that to show that you're there to support them. You're not there to get them in trouble. You're not there to get angry at them. You're just there to be like, hey, do you need help? Like, let's do this together.
Oh, that's beautiful advice.
Yeah.
It really is the elephant in the room because it's like everyone knows.
Yeah.
Especially growing up in high school, it's like everyone knows.
Yeah.
And so many people have a form of it that it's like, gosh, it's, it is so hard to approach.
Yeah.
That's really great advice.
Yeah. And I think like they'll know, they know too. Like they know that everyone knows. So it's just like going up to them and be like, hey, I'm here to help.
Here to help you.
And at the end of the day, if they don't want that, like you can't force it on them either.
They gotta be ready.
They gotta be ready, which like really is sucky, but just giving them the information, showing them what they can do to get help, and then unfortunately just like leaving it up to them, keeping a really good eye on them and seeing
support.
How it goes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's beautiful. We're now going to jump into our recommendations, which is what we're listening to, reading or watching that our community listening would benefit from. So I'm going to jump in first and say that the podcast that I recommend is Food Psych by Christy Harrison. Mm. That's all about like the psychology of food and understanding what's going on in your mind and the relationship you have with your food. The book I'm recommending is by Chelsea Bonner, who actually, funnily enough, was an old modeling agent at an old agency that I used to work for. And her book is called Body Image Warrior. That's She's cool. massive. Definitely check her out on Instagram as well, Chelsea Bonner. And then for what I'm watching is two movies, which I loved. I Feel Pretty by Amy Schumer, which is just iconic about body image. And the other one is Embrace, which is also a body image. Well, you can say it too. But yeah, fantastic. And there's also obviously great YouTube channels as well, but those two are really good watches.
Yeah.
What about you?
It's interesting. My recommendations, they're not necessarily specific to food, but they kind of do have a lot of relevance to them. So my podcast at the moment is On Purpose by Jay Shetty. I'm obsessed with
him. It's the number one podcast in the world.
It is insane. Yeah. And he doesn't really have specific ones about food, but it's all about habits and behavior and self-sabotage and therapy. And that is really important for me and like to be able to educate my clients and things. So 100% recommend that. He has like two podcasts a week, I think. So there's never,
They're phenomenal.
It's insane. Anyway, and then book, The Mountain Is You by Brianna, I think it's Weist or West.
She's got 101 essays.
Yes, fantastic. Love that book too.
I haven't read it. It's
obsessed
on my list.
Obsessed with it. Like,
life-changing.
I've watched it. I've read it three times. It's all about, this one in particular is about self-sabotage and why we do certain things even though we know we shouldn't. And it's a lot to do, you can apply it to a lot of things, but a lot of things to do with food as well and our behavior with food and exercise and relationships. So highly recommend.
Brianna West.
Yeah. And then what am I watching? Embrace. I watched several times. I think it's fantastic. But yeah, that's it.
Yeah, beautiful. Gosh, this was such a great episode. Thank you so
much. Thanks for chatting.
You are incredible.
Oh, you are.
You're like, it's so nice to, I feel really comfortable with you just to have told you like, I mean, look, we're telling half the bloody Australia anyway, but it's nice to sit here and you hold space for me and also give such great advice for everyone listening. This is such an important topic and definitely really proud to be able to, you know, get you in and speak the truth and, you know, you're a professional and people should be seeking professional help for this.
Absolutely.
And also recognizing, you know, some of the characteristics we spoke about today.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And so nice to be able to talk about this stuff because it's not unfortunately talked about enough and it needs to be. And you know, if anyone's struggling out there, there is help. Like, it really is help, but it's just finding the right help and feeling supported. That's just, yeah, my biggest advice.
Totally.
Yeah.
Oh, babes, this was amazing. Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
For our community listening at home, you guys can find Alice on Instagram at @AliceBleithman_dietitian. All of her details and the things we recommended will be in the show notes.
Amazing.
Thanks, guys. Better For It is presented by me, Katie Williams. Producer, Lindsay Green. Audio producer, Nikki Sitch. Executive producer, Nick McClure. Stay in touch with me and follow me on Instagram at Katie Williams.
Listener.